Mr. Brook.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon to all of the delegates, and thank you very much for attending this afternoon's session. I will be dealing with item number 3 on the agenda, which gives you an update on the committee's work under the first optional protocol. As you know, this is the addendum to the treaty that recognizes the competence of the committee to consider individual communications from persons alleging a violation of one or more of their rights under the covenant. I will briefly touch upon 3 main themes: institutional, procedural, and substantive matters. But in the interest of time and to better facilitate responding to any specific matters you may wish to raise under the optional protocol, I will provide only a very succinct overview. And at the end of our presentation, I invite you to raise with any of us from the committee any questions or clarifications you may wish to have addressed. Now, beginning with the institutional matters, perhaps first of all, I can give you an idea of the workload of the committee in connection with individual communications. There is and continues to be a steady increase in the number of cases registered by this committee. In 2021, for example, we registered 212 cases as compared with 170 from the year before. This is distinct from the number of cases or requests made to the committee, which is a considerably higher figure. According to figures from the Secretariat processes roughly 3,000 complaints each year, which means that the committee ends up registering roughly less than 10% of the complaints filed. It is important to note that the cases registered by the Human Rights Committee account for more than half, perhaps closer to 70% of the cases registered by all the other committees combined. To give you an idea of the disparity in the workload of the Human Rights Committee, whereas in 2021, as I just said, we registered 212 cases, the next highest number to be registered was by the Committee Against Torture, which registered 52. Meanwhile, in the same year, CEDAW registered 11, CRPD 9, and CERD 5. So the work before the Human Rights Committee in terms of individual communications is incomparably higher. Over the past 3 years, from 2019 to 2021, the committee adopted 422 decisions. To give you a brief idea of our processes, at the time of registration, the committee, through its special rapporteurs and new communications and interim measures, decides whether or not to register a communication, and when requested, whether or not to grant a request for interim measures. Roughly 1/3 of the communications transmitted to the committee for determination of registration include a request for interim measures. Interim measures bear an element of urgency, which require quick processing by the Secretariat and quick determination by the committee. Once registered, the exchange of views proceeds. This is where the state party and the author put forward their arguments and counterarguments. This process of case management, so to speak, is overseen by the petitions unit, which may also involve interim motions throughout the process, such as requests to examine admissibility separate from merits, to lift interim measures, to suspend the case, to intervene, and so on. Once this phase is completed, the case is ready for drafting, again done by the petitions unit under the supervision of designated members. The completed draft is considered initially by a working group in advance of the session, and then at the actual session following, the full committee reviews, debates, and examines the proposal before adopting its final views. Permit me to add that the entire process involves detailed research by the highly trained and expert staff of the petitions unit and close consideration and discussion by members at varying stages. This method aims for and facilitates integrity of reasoning, fidelity to jurisprudence, and justice and fairness in outcome. Given that we comprise 18 members from different legal systems as well as cultural and religious backgrounds, along with a variety of individual professional experiences, our views benefit from thorough and rigorous examination before adoption. In terms of outcome, roughly 50% of the decisions taken by the committee are findings of violations of provisions of the covenant. The other 50% include inadmissibility, non-violation, and discontinuance. Once views are transmitted to the state party concerned, the phase of implementation begins. Regrettably, the level of implementation of decisions remains quite low. Moreover, the Secretariat does not have dedicated resources to monitor the implementation of the committee's views. However, under our existing process, the committee aims to track and ensure that measures requested are in fact implemented. Currently, there are 202 cases being considered under this follow-up procedure. Regarding the types of cases we deal with, you may be interested to learn, for instance, of the four areas which represent 84% of all our decisions. These are deportation and extradition cases, which account for 33% of our cases. 20% are accounted for by arbitrary detention, torture, enforced disappearance, death penalty, and extrajudicial execution. 19% relate to freedom of expression and assembly, and 12% relate to fair trial and due process. Some of the recurring as well as novel issues recently covered by our views, and I will only give a brief overview here, concern, for example, the right of life in the context of a state's positive obligations, thus ensuring, for example, pesticides and chemicals used in agrarian settings meet certain standards. The scope of Article 24's protection of children, involving the right to nationality and humane treatment by national authorities. The protection of religious freedom, which benefits all religions as no single belief system enjoys dominance the world over. And as always, the ubiquitous challenge of finding the appropriate balance between individual rights protected by the covenant and public interests such as public safety, public health. This has come into sharp focus in a variety of cases concerning states' responses to the COVID-19 pandemic, which examine the implications of lockdowns and curfews and other measures in connection with rights such as the rights, freedom of movement, practice of religion, and even the freedom of expression. But aside from these recent events, all our cases engage this perennial conflict, which we seek to determine a fair balance, and that is between the individual and the community. Already, it should be clear what types of problems are faced by the committee in this area. In the face of the staggering volume of requests made to us, of the staggering volume